Good morning, Wisconsin. Good morning, world. It's a new day, and we hope you're enjoying it and having a good Friday out there. 9:05 on the clock. Got your host, James, behind the mic. I am joined by CEO of your United Way of Southwood and Adams Counties, Terry Johns. Terry will be right with us. We're going to have some fun this hour. We're going to get into a little entertainment news in a moment. We will get into a great one a little bit later about the top country albums, top 10 country album that change country music. Should be an interesting list. We'll see how much Terry agrees with some of this stuff, how much you guys agree with some of this stuff. Get into that a little bit later. Got some good stories of the day, a possible that ain't right story just to kind of make us laugh, and plenty of good stuff to wrap up the show on. We're going to make sure that you have a positive start to your morning around here. I wanted to kick off with this entertainment news. I thought this was a pretty cool story. And since Terry isn't here, I'm just between us, everybody. I'm going to ramble about acting a little bit. All right, just to warn you. Based on looks, you know, Brad Pitt has about 99% chance of stealing your girl. That's what a lot of people will say. But the 1% in your favor just evaporated too, because it turns out he's also a really awesome human being. Back in 1994, Brad bought a home in L.A. from Elvira, which is kind of interesting, you know, the mistress of the dark and everything. Then over the years, he proceeded to buy all of the surrounding properties to increase the size of his estate. This is something a lot of people do, of course. For actors, it has a little bit of a deeper meaning because there is no retirement plan for actors. There is no 401k or anything like that. So most actors, especially you get to a level of a Brad Pitt, one of the ways that you have a 401k, that you have a retirement plan as an actor, is you buy real estate. You buy land. You take up that. That is something that most act, like you hear a lot of actors, my New York studio apartment, my house in L.A., that kind of thing. And then as their career fades or maybe they start to get closer to retirement, Terry, they will sell one of those properties. That is their retirement plan. That is their 401k. This is what a lot of actors do. So Brad Pitt, I'm talking about here, Terry, and he bought this estate years ago back in 94, and he actually bought it from Elvira. Which is kind of weird.
Funny.
I want to see what that meeting was like.
I want to see what her decor was like.
Yeah. Actually, yes. That's a better one. Yeah. Then over the years, he bought up, proceeded to buy all the preceding land around there to increase his estate. One of those properties belonged to a man in his early 90s. And apparently, his wife had recently died. And he didn't really want to leave. So Brad allowed him to live there rent-free until he passed away. And he lived to the age of 105. He just passed away.
Really awesome.
Elvira figures Brad didn't expect the guy to live that long, but still he never broke the deal. Elvira bought a place nearby, so she and Brad remain neighbors. And that has its perks, like the time she walked her dogs past his house while he was training for Fight Club. She says, quote, I go past Brad's garage, and he's in there wearing only sweatpants and boxing gloves. And so she almost fainted, she said.
And the dog walk got a lot slower.
I imagine. I remember, she says, quote, I remember he goes, hey, how are you? And I'm like, huh? I couldn't talk. I was turning red and I almost fainted.
Like that stammering thing? Yeah. Right? Maybe it should be called a dog gawk then.
Oh, nicely done, Terry. Nice. That's the joke of the day. That's the joke of the day.
I'm just saying.
Nicely done. Nice. I love that. That was fantastic. FYI, Brad bought the place from Elvira for 1.7. Last month, he sold it for 40 mil. Like, this is what I'm talking about.
Nuts?
This is the retirement plan. This is the way it goes. And not to say that Brad Pitt needs it that 40 mil necessarily right now. He's still a working actor and everything, but... He'll be the first to tell you, and I say this because I've heard him in interviews, he's an intelligent guy. He knows his career, and he also knows it as a shelf life. Like, all this stuff is a shelf life. There are 1,000 Brad Pitts behind him waiting for his gigs. So as soon as the casting directors decide that chisel in your jaw isn't there, or that gray in your hair is too much or whatever... You know, that ends. And so it's not the same as it is for female actors where you turn 27 and it's
like... And then you're the grandma?
Yeah, then we'll see you when you're 40. Yeah. Like, thankfully, it's gotten a lot better, but it's still bad.
You know, in most cases, real estate is a sound investment. So yep. it is a smart place to put your money. Sometimes, I mean, not always in very eccentric kind of circumstances, but just in general, I mean, that's smart.
I go to one of the greatest quotes I've ever heard in a TV show, movie, anything. Buy land, God ain't making any more of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one of the greater sound investments you can have. I wanted to touch on this as well because I'm enjoying this process, especially as somebody who's a bit of an outsider when it comes to country music. I don't know country music that well, and it's not my wheelhouse, but I am a fan of writers. I'm a fan of storytellers, and country music is filled with that. There's so many of them. So I do find myself from time to time getting into a handful of songs that I didn't even know was country, but it's actually country. I'm not talking like a pop song that has a bit of a twing in it. I mean, like real country. This happens all the time to me. So I'm really enjoying seeing some of this as it's going. Turns out the death of award shows was greatly over-exaggerated, at least for country music fans. Sunday's CMT Music Awards had a total of 5.43 million viewers.
Isn't that crazy?
That was the show's largest audience ever. Last year's was 5.16. Final numbers are expected to be even higher, with CBS projecting a total of 5.68 million viewers when you include Paramount Plus live streams. Speaking of that, it was the most streamed show of the night on Paramount Plus.
Do you think it was the hosts?
I think that didn't hurt. I think the hosts had a lot to do with it. I think the fact that they do award shows the way you're supposed to. It's about the artists. It's about the music. It's not just the people patting themselves on the back.
I feel like they've kind of kept the tradition of award shows.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like when you think back 30 years, kind of all award shows were like that. I mean, I'm not saying it hasn't evolved and changed at all, but they've kept that tradition. And like you said, made it about the artists.
When we were kids and the MTV Awards came out, it was fun because it was different. They didn't take it so seriously. It was a little lighter, and you needed that. It seems like every award show has either turned into the MTV Awards or the our noses are up in the air and we want to pat ourselves on the back award show. Like, nobody wants to see that. And you're really hurting the industry, if you ask me. Like, these awards, like, especially for actors. Actors have a hard enough time having any legitimacy in the creative world or anything like that. We get all told this all the time. And then you ask just people, just regular old everyday people. And actors are all divas. Actors have all these egos and all these things and stuff. And me, along with millions of other actors, kind of fight against that. And then these award shows happen. And all you see is these actors up there patting themselves on the back and all these things. And it's just
nobody can fit through the door, but right?
I feel like the CMT Awards, it almost feels like they haven't even, they like, I'm not going to pay any attention to any of this other stuff. We're just going to do our thing.
We're going to do our thing.
I really admire that.
You know, I know a couple that they happened to be in Las Vegas one year when this was going on. Mm. It was at the MGM Grand, and they went. You know, like they had tickets. They knew in advance when they were going. Yeah. And she said it was one of the neatest experiences she's ever,
I bet,
ever had.
Now that's an award show I would go to.
Yeah.
If I didn't know all the music.
I don't know that I've ever sat there and going like, oh, I'd love to be there, you know, in person or whatever. Yeah. But after talking to them, I'm like, you know, that would be kind of a cool experience.
Yeah. Taking a look at wait a minute, one second. If you can go to any award show, is that the one you'd go to?
Probably.
I think
I'm maybe not thinking of all my options, but
You know, I think the Grammys are a little tempting, only because I don't care about the Grammys, but all the music. Getting to see all those different styles of music in one setting.
I think I would I would do this. Either the CMT Awards or the ACM, you know, the American Country Music Awards, whichever. But
both good choices.
Yeah.
Is there one that takes place at the Grand Ole Opry? Because I just want to see a show at the Grand Ole Opry.
I don't think so, because it's not big enough.
I feel like it's one of those things where you got it. Like, if you're a fan of music, you got to see a show
there. If you ever get near Nashville, yes.
Yeah.
Completely.
Just got to check it out.
It was really cool.
Looking at what's new on your big screen this weekend, Air has a open Wednesday, but that is released. That is Ben Affleck directs this sports drama about the origin of Nike's Air Jordan shoe line, featuring himself and Jason Bateman as the founder of Nike. They hire Matt Damon to come up with a new pitch to save the company from bankruptcy. You're seeing Ben Affleck and Matt Damon working together. You haven't seen that a lot, but those two, of course, best friends, got their start together with Good Will Hunting. I love Jason Bateman. I have no interest in this.
See, and I'm a little curious about it. I would not go to the movie theater and watch it.
Yeah.
But if it was on, you know, if I was flipping through and it was on, I'd be curious. Because, I mean, that's our era, right? Like,
absolutely.
I don't know. So I just, Oh, I'm not dying to see it, but I'm curious about it.
They could have pulled me into this very easily had they put any of the focus on Michael Jordan, the guy that the shoe was actually designed around. Instead, it's just all about the white guys behind the scenes and everything. And it's like, come on. Like, you're going to do this whole, you're calling it Air, and Michael Jordan isn't even in it or barely in it or whatever. That seems ridiculous. We're going to do a show.
Soapbox people, here we go.
We're going to do a show about the San Francisco 49ers, but we're not going to include Joe Montana. What are you doing? You can't do that. The Super Mario Brothers movie is rated PG. I happen to have heard that Seth is going to be taking his boys to this one. Cool. So I know they're going to be going to this. You have Chris Pratt as Mario, Charlie Day from Always Sunny in Philadelphia as Luigi. They're the two plumbers, of course. Anna Taylor-Joy is Princess Peach. Jack Black is Bowser. Keegan-Michael Key is Toad. Seth Rogen is Donkey Kong. And Fred Armisen is Kong's dad. Got a big cast on this one.
Yeah, when I was at Titanic, you know, a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
One of the previews was for this movie, and it looked really cute.
It does look good. They seem to be having already pretty good ticket sales, too, like pre-sales. They seem to be doing really well with it. It feels like it's been a bit since there's been a kids movie in theaters. So I think that that's part of the reason, too.
Yeah, and I have no kids that would have interest in this. And you know what I mean? Like, if they were little and wanted to go, I would definitely take them. But I don't know. But it looked cute.
Seems fun. Yeah. And in a limited release, rated PG-13 movie Paint. Owen Wilson plays a Bob Ross-style artist who's 3 decades as the number one painter on public television comes to a crashing halt when the station gives a younger painter his gig.
Does he have the hair?
Yes, he does have
the
hair.
Are you serious?
Yes. It actually, the trailer of it made it look really good. And Owen Wilson has grown so much as an actor.
I love him.
I'm a fan. I wasn't always a fan. I have become a fan of him.
See, and I love the Night at the Museum movies.
Yeah.
Also good family fun.
Yeah,
you know?
And he is really
and
good.
And I love
those.
Him in there. Like, really I just can't. So for me, and I don't, I go into this with a like comedy. I have no idea what the genre of it is, but I go into this because I think just the hair is funny.
Rami Malek, who was also in those movies, and Owen Wilson, some other actors I've heard tell these stories. So when they would have some downtime on set, because Robin was one of these, well, he wasn't necessarily a method actor. He was very, I mean, all my research I do, all that learning and stuff comes from him and the research he would do for these roles. And he's, of course, playing former President Theodore Roosevelt in that. And he wouldn't stay in character, but he would stick the voice, but he would tell bad, dirty jokes and stuff like that with that voice. And along with that would tell them things that maybe they didn't know about Theodore Roosevelt. So he was like not just making them laugh, but educating them at the same time.
Seriously, I love those movies.
Well, they're great movies.
Owen Wilson is hilarious.
It does look, and it looks pretty good. I'm hopeful that it does well and everything, because movies like this, I think, look, I love superhero movies. I see them all. I like them and everything. We need more movies like this. We need more movies that are about other things. We need some of that. And it looks pretty good. Got a nice cast. Stephen Root, one of my favorite character actors of all time. Wendy McLovin Covey from Reno 911 and the Goldbergs is in it. Great TV mom. So, yeah, it looks good. We will take a break right here. We'll come back and get into the 10 debut albums that changed country music. I think this is going to be a fun list. Come back with that on The Morning Show at WFHR, locally grown radio. Welcome back to The Morning Show here at WFHR, locally grown radio. Terry and James here with you. And, of course, Terry, big country music fan, your wheelhouse, I would say.
Yeah,
you know
absolutely.
This genre quite well. And we are a big fans, of course, of country music, as our sister station, WIRI 105.5, playing the best of country legends over there. You can check it out anytime we are not on the air.
You know, and it is fun, because sometimes I just hear, like, this random old country song that I'm like, oh, I haven't heard that in, you know, however many years. Yeah. Like, I do love the lineup on there. It's awesome.
And, of course, we mentioned earlier during Misty's that it's Joe's birthday. And Joe is, of course, our designer over there. I mean, he's the one that programs the music and everything. So shout out to him. Did want to also mention these albums, because this is, I think that this is kind of cool, especially with some of these older albums, because it's not just country music. While we're focusing on country music, these artists influenced people that went on to do other music,
absolutely,
other genres and everything.
Or have a cupcake named after them.
Yes. And I mean, just like with the blues, every artist you love was influenced by the blues. I mean, it doesn't matter who we're talking about. You can mention Waylon Jennings, you can mention John Lennon, any of them. They've all been influenced by the blues. And that, to me, it's so cool that we don't have enough of these opportunities in life where we see these connections. every bit of music you've ever heard played with the same notes. They're not making new notes here. And that's so cool to me, the creativity. But then the fact that basically, if you break it down like that, we all like the same music. It's all played with the same
notes. Absolutely.
That brings us closer together. That's a connection.
You just took me back to like first grade music. Every good boy does fine.
Oh, nice. Yes, everybody. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. TheBoot.com posted a list of 10 debut albums that changed country music. And a few fairly recent ones made the list. I want to start at number 10 with this. And it kicks off with Traveler by Chris Stapleton back in 2015. It won Album of the Year at the CMAs and AMAs. It was also won Best Country Album and Best Country Solo Performance at the Grammys. Stapleton really swept the awards that year.
He really did. And coincidentally, for whatever reason, I had it on that year. I mean, I wasn't like sitting there waiting to watch him, but I just happened to have it on, and he really did. But you know, when you were first talking about this list, I don't know, when you said there's some recent artists, and sometimes I don't know if that should be.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, it just in my opinion, like it should be all kind of old. But Chris Stapleton has an old traditional country sound.
Yeah,
and I've always thought that about him.
And even though I don't know most of his music, if I hear him on the radio, I know that's him. Yeah. I know his voice.
Oh, yeah.
I know, like,
it's distinctive, but it's just, I don't know. To me, he has the old country sound, and I just like him.
It's a bit old school, but he doesn't doesn't modern. Montevello by Sam Hunt in 2014. It helped usher in a new sound that blended country, hip hop, pop. He was the first in 22 years to top Billboard's country albums, hot country songs, and country airplay charts all at once.
Yeah, he's pretty popular. I agree. I think he's a little poppy, but you know, not a bad thing. And certainly the younger kids like him.
I think about this all the time. I remember they were interviewing MC Hammer once, and he was talking about how he was hanging out at an after party once with like Dr. Dre and Suge Knight and Tupac and
were
and
they
Snoop.
Trying to steal his pants?
And like, wait a minute, what? Like MC Hammer, like the pop star, hanging out with those guys, and you hear them talk about that. You hear Dr. Dre and some of these guys talk about it. They love those guys because they help bring the music into a different, bring in new listeners. And every genre needs that, needs those kind of poppier artists to bring in. And maybe you get them, maybe they start out listening to Sam Hunt and they come away listening to Waylon Jennings. You just never know. Mm-hmm. It doesn't happen all the time, but every genre needs those kind of artists. Number 8, Here's to the Good Times from Florida Georgia Line in 2012, because it, quote, kicked off the bro country trend. I'm just reading what's in front of me. It had one of the biggest hits to date, Cruise, and ended up being the 6th best-selling album in the U.S. back in 2013.
So I don't mind them, and I like a lot of their music, but what they remind me of, they're like the boy band of country.
That's where
bro thing's coming from. You know what I mean? Like they're like the NSYNC of country.
Okay. Gotcha. Because I have no idea anything about them. That's it. I think the only thing I know is, isn't their name, because some of the members are from Georgia and some of them are from Florida. Okay, that's the only thing I know about them. Yeah. I don't mean that as an insult.
No,
I'm just being honest. Taylor Swift's self-debut album in 2006. She was only 16, but wrote and co-wrote all 11 songs on it. Her 5 singles were Tim McGraw, Teardrops on My Guitar, Our Song, Pictures to Burn, Shouldn't Say No. Taylor starts out in the country music. She starts out taking over Nashville and taking over the Grand Ole Opry and all this, and where she has gone now. What's interesting to me about her, and I'm not a Taylor Swift fan, and I don't mean that in a mean way. It's just not my... She's doing just fine without me. She doesn't need me to buy Taylor Swift.
But you really
music.
Don't want to be a Swiftie?
No, I have no interest. But I have all kinds of respect for her. For one, the stance that she took with this the producers and like, hey, I should own my own music and stuff. I was 16, et cetera, et cetera. And they're like, no, we're going to keep this. So what does she do? She does the thing that like our kids say, well, I'm going to do this then. Yeah, you go ahead. Sure. Like you're really going to.
Like it's all talk.
You're really going to re-record all your own music so that you can have the ownership of it and everything. What artist would. Oh, wait a minute. She's doing that? Oh, God, she's doing it. Because she's
done.
She's bigger than a household name.
Yeah.
Like that's how big she. And to do something like that, I have so much credit for that. Like respect for that. Like artists should own their music. I'm not saying production companies shouldn't get some of that. They deserve some of it, but
they've got skin in the game. But it's it's hers.
The stance she's taken. I talk about artists that are influenced musically. She's influenced people behind the scenes. Every young artist coming up now is looking at what she did and saying, "Hey, wait a minute! It's important." important to own your music library. I just saw Sting sell his music library for $400 million. I should probably own my music. I think that's awesome. I think that's really important. I also think it's really cool to see where she grew from country music to evolve to a pop star, but she hasn't let go of her country roots.
Oh, for sure.
She still does a lot of that stuff.
She's
and I have
awesome.
A lot of respect for that. Remembering where you come from.
Incredibly talented.
Twice the Speed of Life by Sugarland. It came out in 2004 and was a top 20 album all across music genres. That one a little bit more because it was in the pop charts. It was in the country charts.
I am a huge Sugarland fan. I love, seriously, like that's a go-to for me. If I'm like just sitting, want to put something on, that's who I choose. I'm a little, I don't know if they're in this list per se.
Now see that,
but I mean they are obviously, and I get the crossover between genres and stuff, but
yeah,
I don't know.
Interesting. I know they have at least one or two songs I know.
Oh, you for sure do.
Yeah,
you know more than that.
Number five, Wide Open Spaces by the Chicks. Of course, then I think they were known as
the Dixie Chicks. Yep.
They sold more records than all other country groups combined back in 1998. Now, to me, this is one of the things that they were talking about before with the other artists. This is the band that I was thinking of because, we remember Garth Brooks taking over music in our high school age and stuff. And then it felt like there was this dip.
There was a gap.
Yeah. And then these ladies came along and they just seemed to really like not so much take over country music, but take over music. Like they felt like even as somebody who didn't listen to country music, I knew who the Dixie Chick, I knew, about them. And
I was all in on that. I mean, I still like them. I do. I really like the Dixie Chicks. So
I same things I was saying about Taylor Swift. I feel about them. I appreciate the way they carry themselves, the way that they look out for other artists.
I think Taylor Swift maybe has a little bit, possibly more integrity, just in how she presents herself and that kind of thing. But, Chicks have also taken a stance where they're going to stand up for what they believe in, and and that's okay too.
Storms of Life by Randy Travis from 1986.
Okay, that's what I was looking for on this list, right?
It helped revive the classic country sound, and it had his first number one hit, On the Other Hand. I think of country music, and it's almost the first thing I think of is Randy Travis's voice. And it's probably in part because
of his look.
But when I was growing up, us growing up in the same era and stuff, this is when that came out and everything. And that was some of my first, chance to hear country music.
I'm a big Randy Travis fan.
Yes, I remember that one. Number three, Why Not Me by The Judds in 1984. It had four number one hits and helped usher in the female bands. The Dixie Chicks, a lot of those bands took a lot of influence from the Judds.
And again, though, I would expect to have expected to see them on this list.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yes, absolutely. I think almost every one of these artists, certain artists, especially some of the ones we've just mentioned, you can't tell the story of country music without mentioning a Randy Travis or the Judds.
Well, and thinking about the dynamic, too, of family, and trying to do that way. I mean,
I will say this, though. I do remember some people saying, boy, that Randy Travis, I don't like this new country. I remember that. I remember that about Garth Brooks. So I think this, genre, it happens with every genre. It happens with rock music.
And just the passage
the
of time, right?
Yeah, yes. Like a lot of the modern rock bands, I listen to them. I'm like, that ain't rock. But it's rock. It's rock to them.
But it's not.
No, it's not. Connie Smith's self-debut album from 1965, her song Once a Day, was the first country debut single by a woman to hit number one.
Really?
That's pretty cool.
I didn't know that.
I didn't either, yeah. And Connie Smith, I mean, that story alone, but her voice and a lot of what she did behind the scenes. So we're getting to the number one song, and I got to say that right away, I'm very disappointed I don't see Dolly Parton on this list. Maybe because her debut album was not.
And I don't know. So that's what I was going to say when you brought up the Connie Smith thing. And maybe I'm just not thinking about age, appropriately. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking about some of those really old time greats, a Dolly, a Loretta Lynn, like all of the. But I don't know. They definitely could have had a softer debut album. Right.
Yeah.
So
it happens all the time.
And probably more often than not. right?
Because we're talking about it, and I thought I'd look up just for the heck of it. Like, what was Garth Brooks' debut album? Hungry Years. Like, who remembers that? Like, you remember Rope into the Wind. You remember No Fences. You remember those. But his debut album, which is what they're referring
exactly.
to. I get it. Because I was like, wait a minute. You got to have Garth Brooks on here. But you definitely have to have this one on here. Number one on the list, and honestly, still a great album. It holds up. It always will hold up. Johnny Cash and His Hot and Blue Guitar. Came out in 1957 and still hits home today.
1957.
Whew. That's awesome. The Man in Black knew what he was doing. I Walked the Line, Folsom Prison Blues.
Isn't that... That is really cool. That's 66 years ago.
Yeah. And still influencing artists.
It's very cool.
There's very few artists you will hear, especially male artists, that you'll hear nowadays that, yeah, I don't care what the genre is, that weren't influenced by Johnny Cash. I mean hip-hop, I mean heavy metal, I mean all of it.
Well, and then there was the image thing, too, right? And the look. And that was, I'm guessing, but that was kind of before everybody had their own look.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It was a whole package.
Oh, yeah. Well, and especially, because I didn't know country music as a kid, but my nan and papa loved Johnny Cash, loved Patsy Cline.
But you knew the Man in Black.
I knew the Man in Black. I knew Johnny Cash. And yeah. I didn't know what he looked like. I just knew his sound. And I loved his sound. And then because papa knew I liked him and everything, he bought me a cassette tape of, like, Johnny Cash's Greatest Hits or something like that. And I see the cover, and it's Johnny all in black with a dog and a guitar, and it stays in my head of the definition of cool. Like the definition of that is what a rock star is supposed to look like. It still is to this day, like in my head. Johnny Cash literally changed music. It's not just country music. I like the list. I like that they focus on country, but I do want to take a moment to say that it wasn't just country Johnny Cash influenced.
And it is cool that he has number one,
it
right?
Because
he should.
Cool.
Yeah.
And that it's an album from 1957. That's just really noteworthy. We'll take a break. We'll get to Melissa's news. We'll come back and have some more fun on the morning show at WFHR, locally grown radio.
Finally!
Morning show here at WFHR.
You're taking me right back to sixth grade.
Yep. Hope you're having a great start to your Friday. Just got a little better around here for some of us.
I love this. Don't talk.
Good stuff.
I love that you were just quiet that whole time.
I just listened.
Were you scared?
Wasn't scared as much as I'm not testing this one. There's certain you choose your battles wisely in life, you know?
I love that song.
It's a fun song. It's a fun story about the music video. If you ever watched the music video, they apparently were out there for like 20 hours waiting for sunshine, couldn't get any, and they were just having the worst time, and then they got to do this music video where they're all happy and all that and everything. It's just funny.
See, and that's the beauty of the 80s, right? Like,
yes.
They had to wait for the sun. Now, they just artificially plunk the sun in the background.
Yeah. No, I miss that part of things. We have a, I would say that ain't right story here, but maybe not. Maybe those out there listening might think differently about this one, especially there is a lot of Starbucks fans out there. I doubt this was the reaction Starbucks was hoping for with their new olive oil drinks.
Oh, ugh.
People online are comparing them to laxatives. Back in February, Starbucks announced a new line of Oleato coffee. Each drink comes with a spoonful of olive oil, and it's supposed to be very healthy.
Now, okay, I remember when this was announced back in February because we talked about it.
Yeah.
Right? And we did. And they do say a teaspoonful of olive oil is good for you.
Yes, yes.
You know, to just take on your own. But, okay. I give that little evil laugh, but seriously, like you're bringing those Starbucks drinks now to everybody you work with?
Right. Yeah. Oh, yes.
I brought you coffee.
Look, everybody, I got you coffee. Huh? That's great, right? They're only selling them at select locations for now, so most people haven't tried them yet. But the advice from people who have is make sure you're near a bathroom. People are cracking jokes about it on social media. One person said the Oleato at Starbucks is a legit laxative. Other people have claimed it gave them an upset stomach and that the olive oil just tastes weird.
Well, so it's going to take your system a little bit of time, right?
Exactly.
Like, if this is something that you want to do, I personally don't need that in my coffee. If I want to have a spoonful of olive oil, well, maybe just do it at home.
Yeah, I'm
it's
a little
not
spoiled
really my thing,
here.
But
as an Italian, I naturally have a certain amount of olive oil always in my system because I had a nana.
And so you have a tolerance.
The amount of olive oil I've eaten in my life, I could not eat it for 5 years and I'd still have some olive oil in me.
So you do need to be skeptical, though. If one of your office mates brings you a Starbucks,
yes.
pop the cover off and see if it's starting to separate, if it's a little oily.
Might want to check that out.
And be close to the bathroom.
There are also quite a few people who like it. So maybe this is a new thing for them. I don't know. But someone talked to a nutritionist who said coffee plus olive oil could definitely get things moving down there. Coffee is a stimulant that already has that effect to some degree. And just like castor oil, olive oil can help with constipation. So it's like a 1-2 punch.
So, I mean, they're doing a service.
Kind of. I mean, if this is an issue for you, then maybe this is the perfect drink.
See?
She says the effect might even be more dramatic if you have an Olito drink on an empty stomach. And how many people do we know drink coffee on an empty stomach? I know many, many people
that
absolutely.
Do that.
So that I think
it
we're
is
seeing
kind of
a little.
Funny. Do you think when Starbucks designed this, do you think it ever crossed their mind that it was a laxative?
I don't think it did. I think is.
I mean, like, are they sitting there laughing like the evil masterminds?
Oh, that I
wonder. Or are they just thinking it was just a good health? I mean, really, what is it?
I think they're looking at spinning it, and I think they're looking at those numbers going down or something, and that's got to freak them out. I mean, we've had a handful of Starbucks close recently, and I didn't think that was going to happen, so that has been kind of interesting. But I find it more interesting and even funnier when this stuff happens, especially to a Starbucks or a Nike or an Amazon, any of these places that spend literally millions of dollars a year on advertising and researching these things and trying to find a new drink to make you spend $20 on, and they do all of this, and then this happens.
We'll get you to the bathroom first.
Yeah, like the last thing in the world that they were thinking or that they wanted. Like, just all that money for what,
But like you said, some people are liking it and enjoying it. And but you know what? With anything, that's what I just call like a rich food, right? Mm-hmm. Like anything like that. Some things your body can handle and some things it just can't.
You touched on something important there, too. If you're just introducing this to your body, it's going to affect almost anything will. And no matter what you're putting into your system, you have to look at it like a car in some ways.
I mean,
you put water into your gas tank, it's going to affect it.
So
it's going to change it.
You know, probably don't have one of these right before a first date.
Yeah.
It'll be your last date.
Probably a good call. Good call by you. I'm going to write that down. That's a good call. That's a good idea. We will take a break. We'll come back. Get into some more fun.
I'll get you a Starbucks gift card just in case.
You would. Morning show at WFHR. Welcome back to the morning show here at WFHR, locally grown radio. Terry and James here with you. We hope you're having a fantastic day out there. Happy Friday, everybody. Going to get you ready for the weekend, for Easter, and all of that. Got one more That Ain't Right story, though, to get to first. And this is another one of those interesting ones where maybe it's a That Ain't Right story, maybe it isn't. Maybe it's a good story of the day. This is like finding a diamond in the rough, except that it's actually finding a diamond ring in unfiltered sewage. So it's a little similar. A maintenance employee was working on some equipment at Rogers Wastewater Treatment Plant in Rogers, Minnesota, north of Minneapolis, when he found a diamond ring.
Okay.
It was a total coincidence. He just happened to notice something shiny in the sand and grit and fished it out. He said that it's not something you could ever find by trying to look for it. It was just a stroke of luck when he compared to the odds of winning the lottery. They're trying to find the owner, so they aren't releasing an image of it. The problem is the wastewater isn't ever fully cleared out. So it could have been lost down that drain in Rogers any time between now and 60 years ago.
So that's kind of a cool mystery.
Yeah.
I mean, sad that someone lost their ring. Maybe they flushed it on purpose.
Maybe.
I mean, there is that.
That
is cool that he spotted that, right? You think about that, the work that he's doing. I was thinking of it more like, where you sometimes when you lose something, mm-hmm. and you have an idea of where it is, and then you have to dig for it.
Yes.
That's gross.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that would be that ain't right. But this, It's kind of cool.
I like the mystery with it. And I'm there's with you on
well,
that.
And it's a little bit romantic, right? Like, yes, I mean, yes. Not the sewage treatment part, but just no. The idea that this ring lost and now it's been found. Kind of the message in the bottle, right? Uh-huh. Like, you know what I mean? Like, all of a sudden it's found. But it also could be where, you know, the person wanted it gone and now it's resurfaced. So there could be that ain't right creepy part of it.
Yeah.
They don't know exactly how the ring got there, but it could have accidentally dropped into a drain or been intentionally flushed. Nice note.
There we go.
Nice job, Terry. Meaning someone may not want it back. If anyone did lose a ring in that area, reach out to them. They say it's unique enough that they'd know it, that you know it was yours.
Oh, so that's cool.
I like
cool.
that. That's interesting.
And which would explain not showing a picture. Yeah. And I get that. I mean, because honestly, there's so many people that would try to get that ring, which just irritates the heck out of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that would lie about it. So it is good. They should keep it quiet. And but, you know, wouldn't it be funny? Not funny for them. But now all of a sudden there's like 100,000 people that lost a ring in that area.
Yes. Yeah. Everybody. Heck, I'm calling them up. I'm like, you know, I lost a ring over there.
They're like, no, you didn't.
No, you didn't. I do want to say, because while this is a murky story, whether it's good or it's bad or whatever, there is a clear good story in here. John Tierney. That is the name of the custodial, the worker there who found the ring. And we never even hear about this if John just pockets it. Which he could have done and nobody would have known.
And it's super cool.
I think that's really cool. I think that's that makes this even more romantic of a story to me that happened. I really do hope that somebody comes forward. I'd love to hear a follow-up to this story.
And it does happen.
Yeah,
I mean, you see it all the time. Like someone will, I mean, it's a little bit more descriptive, but you know, someone finds like a class ring.
Yeah.
You know, you see that and then they're like, oh, you know, it's from this school. But, you know, you need to contact us to let us know.
We did a good story some years back about a lady who was gardening and she lost her wedding ring. And then like a year or two later or something, the ring came up and it was around a carrot or like a leaf or something like that.
Really?
And she found it in the garden. Yeah, it was one of our good stories. I'll never forget it. It was so cool because I remember reading it and being like, well, is this real? And I looked into it a little bit and like, oh, yeah, that really happened. That was pretty cool.
Isn't that, you know, if I lost my ring gardening, I'm pretty sure that I would screen all of that dirt. You know what I mean?
Right,
like 10 feet wider and 10 feet deeper and find it. Like, I don't know if I could just walk away if I knew that that's where I lost it.
I'm with
but
you.
It does. I mean, that's getting in the weeds, but
I get you. I know what you're saying. I wanted to also take a moment to get some, you know, really wrap things up on a bunch of good stories of the day. But I want to start off with a local good story because a Wisconsin town was named one of America's most underrated cities. This is a pretty cool, I thought. America is filled with amazing cities that promise exciting adventures. So you don't always have to travel to a big touristy city to have a good time. Reader's Digest compiled a list of the 15 most underrated cities in the U.S. that travelers should visit. And one of them is right here in Wisconsin. They're talking about western Wisconsin, Eau Claire.
Oh, very cool.
Eau Claire is among the most underrated cities in the U.S. While many people flock to nearby Minneapolis or other popular cities like Milwaukee or Madison, this town shouldn't be counted out for places to have a good time. And here's what the site had to say as far as our friends here at the Reader's Digest. Eau Claire, Wisconsin, frequently cited as the next Austin. With an indie vibe and creative culture, the Midwest city of 68,000 is also a music lover's paradise. The wildly popular Tuesday night blues concerts celebrate their 10th anniversary this year, drawing thousands each week to Owen Park, rain or shine. Visit the Lakely for farm to table fair and craft cocktails paired with live jazz and a game of cub on the patio. Sleep in at the Oxbow Hotel, a boutique property on the Eau Claire River downtown. Then get in line for breakfast at Nucleus and order the Blue Bucks buckwheat pancakes when you turn finally when you go over there.
You know, that's, isn't it kind of cool? I like that when stuff of ours gets featured somewhere because it's only 15 cities that they were featuring.
Yeah,
it's not like it was 1,500. You know what I mean? So what made them pick? I mean, obviously, they just told us why. But,
no,
but you know what
I mean?
Like, what makes them pick an explorer somewhere in Wisconsin when they're only doing 15 on the list?
Right.
I think that's really cool.
Noteworthy. And you look at this too, and this list has some great ones on here. Charlesville in Virginia, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, Greenwich, Connecticut. They're like some cool cities there. That's awesome. I like that. And I thought that was a really fun thing. I didn't see a lot of reporting being done on that, so I wanted to make sure that we mentioned
it. Well, and it's close. It's a really easy day trip. You know, explore Eau Claire.
I love Eau Claire. I've been there a handful of times and have always enjoyed not just Eau Claire, but that area. I really like that area. Let's see here. We got more good stuff to get to. Let's do it. In the lead up to Easter, egg farms have donated over 4 million eggs to food banks across the U.S. It's part of a program run by the American Egg Board called Fighting Hunger by the Dozens.
That's cute, creative, and given the price of eggs, which, I mean, seriously, I'm kind of sick of talking about and hearing about, but given the price of eggs,
that they're still doing that, like that.
And at that capacity. Yeah. I mean, it's not like it's 4,000 eggs. So, yeah, that's really cool.
A couple in Michigan named Carol and Andrew Clark just had a baby girl, and congratulations to them. And that is a big deal because it's the first girl born on Andrew's side of the family in more than 130 years.
No way.
Whoa. The last baby girl on that side of the family was born in 1885. I've never heard of anything like that. That's incredible.
That's pretty cool.
Wow, that is pretty cool. I've just never heard of anything like that. I like that, yeah. An 18-year-old from California just became the youngest person to visit all 44 countries in Europe. He took a gap year after high school to volunteer in Ukraine and used a few months of it to travel. He started in Iceland and ended up in Malta 101 days later.
That's what a cool life experience.
Oh, that's got to be. Yeah, that's got to be heck of an experience. Two garbage men in Albany, New York, saw a building on fire around 2 a.m. Wednesday morning, started kicking in the doors, and saved 15 people.
Unsung heroes.
Yep. Four homes were so badly burned that they had to be torn down, but no one was hurt, thankfully. And again, thanks to these, not firefighters, garbage men.
Absolutely.
Way to be, guys. Nice work. Nice work. Those are heroes right there. New Mexico's Wildlife Department posted a job listing for people willing to cuddle adorable baby bears. There are other job duties, too, but that's the one.
Like
that's
the bear scat?
Yeah, right. The wildlife officers go check on baby bears in winter while their mother is hibernating. They posted photos of looking for professional bear huggers.
Whoa. Don't the baby bears hibernate?
See, that's interesting. I don't know as much about that. you would think they would.
Hey, kids, I'm going to sleep for 5 months.
Right?
See ya.
Yeah. I don't think that's how, maybe that's how it
they
happens.
They do not develop into well-rounded adults.
No.
Just saying.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Do not, yeah. Teenage bears, you think teenagers are bad. Good news for anyone seeing a March Madness game in person. A new study found going to live sporting events can boost a fan's mental health as much as landing a new job. That's interesting.
Well, don't you think any kind of adventurous opportunity is good for your mental health? I mean, I don't know.
No, I agree. I think, yeah. And finally, a 29-year-old guy in Maryland named Marcus Moore has autism, but he hasn't let it stop him from becoming a successful business owner. He worked at a grocery store for years, but he recently came home and told his dad he wanted to make enough money to be self-sufficient someday. So back in October, his parents helped him start a pretzel business called Moore Crunch. The last name Moore. Yeah, I like that. Now several stores in his area are selling them. You can also buy them online at moorecrunch.com, and that's Moore, M-O-O-R-E.
Very cool.
Yeah, I am definitely going to be buying a box from this young man and help him with his business, because that is pretty darn cool. Bookmarking that page right now. That is a great story. That's a great story. I love these stories, too, of these kids. They start a lemonade stand and donate like $1,000 to their Humane Society or something like that. Like, these kids are just amazing.
But even the ability to be self-sufficient and not have to. So I'm gonna jump on a local good story. So one of the programs that Our United Way helps to fund is at ODC, and it is an independent living skills opportunity. So they were, you know, when they came to us asking for funding, they said, you know, what we're hearing from our clients as they're aging out of school, you know, so they might be in their early 20s, is that they don't want to live with mom, and they want an opportunity to live on their own, but don't always have all of the skills needed. And that's what this program is helping, just like this young man. Mm-hmm. I want an opportunity to be self-sufficient. And it's really cool.
And as long as we're talking about it, because that's where I wanted to wrap up, was the United Way and our good stories of the day. And that is the United Way. They are a good story of the day. We, of course, talked about things earlier in the show, but do want to remind everybody, myfreetaxes.com is there. If you want to get a team together to be a part of the, a United We Can event, we greatly encourage you to do that. And plenty of other things, Terry.
Absolutely. And we have Community Shred Day next Wednesday. Yes. So, that's an effort to, let's get rid of identity theft and take care of those sensitive documents. That is on Wednesday, April 12th, 9 a.m. till 11 a.m. at Prevail Bank here in Wisconsin Rapids.
And, it actually got me thinking about, what would I have for documents?
Like, you probably have a box of stuff that could get shredded.
I didn't even think about it until mm-hmm. You met with us on Morning Magazine. Afterwards, I'm like, oh, yeah, I could probably use that, too. You can find out more by going to uwswac.org. Be sure to bookmark that page. And like the United Way on social media, it's a great follow. When you can volunteer at the United Way or with the through the United Way, we greatly appreciate that. You can always call 211 to find out about opportunities in your area.
Absolutely. Look forward to seeing you.
And we also want to, of course, encourage you to listen to our weekend content. Again, the Sunshine Polka Show. Tim's got a great lineup for you this Saturday at 7 a.m. Be sure to check that out. And then Sunday at 1, Seth Faces the Music. Seth's got an amazing theme for you this week. You want to check it out from 6 to 8. And, of course, Director's Cut from 8 to 9. Seth and I will be welcoming in Jordan Bain, lead singer from Save Point.
So you're just teasing. You're not telling what the theme is?
I'm not telling you. Oh. Yeah, you got to listen.
All right.
All that coming up for you this weekend. Terry, have a great weekend. Thanks you for hanging too. Out with us. We'll be back with more Morning Magazine coming up on WFHR Locally Grown Radio.